Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear FIGS because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your FIGS? On shift, on call, on the couch in the break room, listening to this podcast, wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
I'm not sure why we didn't look anything up before we went. Usually we did. Back then, this was around 2006, we'd spend hours online reading about whatever haunted place we were planning to visit. Cemetery legends, asylum ruins, roadside cult sites, the usual. But this one? Witch Road in Fond du Lac County, Wisconsin? We just heard the name from someone at school and went. I was 16, grew up in Appleton. My two friends, Mike and Sarah, were with me that night. It was summer, middle of July, and we were bored. So we printed out the MapQuest directions, threw some flashlights and water bottles into the trunk, and drove 2 hours down to a road we knew nothing about. I remember the silence when we got there. No bugs, no wind, no cars for miles, just tall trees pressing in from both sides, and that kind of dusk light where everything looks blue and hollow. We pulled off near the edge of the woods, just gravel and tall weeds. Mike killed the headlights, and for a second, we just sat there. I stepped out, grabbed my flashlight from the trunk, but I didn't even turn it on. Didn't need to. That's when I saw it. There was a cabin maybe 50, 60 yards into the woods. I hadn't noticed it on the drive up. It just appeared. Looked old, real old. Roof sagging. No lights, no windows. Just there. I motioned to Mike and Sarah. Look, I said. That it? They came around the back of the car. Yeah, has to be, Mike said. Then we saw the light. It was off to the left of the cabin, coming through the trees. This dull, pale blue orb, floating maybe 5 feet off the ground. It moved slow, like it was drifting through water. What the hell is that? Sarah whispered. I didn't answer. I didn't feel scared, which was weird. I should have. But it was like being hypnotized. I walked toward it without thinking. Flashlight still off. Backpack forgotten. Mike followed me quietly. Sarah hung back for a second, then came to. The woods swallowed us in seconds. The road disappeared behind us. I remember the leaves crunching under our feet, the branches tugging at my sleeves. But none of us said anything. The orb just floated deeper in, like it wanted us to follow. Then everything changed. We heard something crashing through the trees, loud and fast, like someone running. And then he was there. This man, about 30 feet ahead, coming straight toward us. He held a lantern. Not a flashlight. A literal, old-school lantern, the kind with a metal handle and glass sides. His clothes were soaked, his hair dripping, like he'd just crawled out of a lake. He had this look, wide eyes, mouth open. But he didn't scream. He said one thing. You have to leave. Now. That was it. Just that. We froze. Sarah started backing up. I looked at Mike, and he just said, go. Now. We turned and ran. No one looked back. The trees seemed darker, closer. I don't even remember how we found the road again, but suddenly we were at the car, throwing open the doors and jumping in like something was behind us. Mike peeled out, tires spitting gravel. We didn't say a word for 10 miles, just heavy breathing and headlights and the occasional slap of a bug against the windshield. Then Sarah broke the silence. Did that guy have a fucking lantern? We all looked at each other. No one answered. What the hell had we just seen? We never talked about it after that night. Not really. No deep dive into the history, No Google searches, no going back. I think we all agreed, without saying it, that we weren't supposed to be there. That light, that cabin, that man, none of it made sense. And that's what makes it worse. It wasn't dramatic or bloody or over the top, just quiet, wrong, and real in a way I can't explain. Story two. I don't talk about this much, not because I'm scared people won't believe me, I honestly don't care, but because it still makes me feel physically sick when I think about it. My name's Eric. I live in San Diego, and back in 2016, I did something real stupid. Something I thought was funny at the time. It was Halloween night. My girlfriend Liv and I were walking through Old Town, doing the usual, checking out haunted sites, reading the dumb little plaques, trying to spook each other. You know how touristy that part of town is, especially that night. Everyone's in costume, vendors selling kettle corn and tarot cards. Dudes dressed like Zorro yelling, "Boo!" at passing kids. Just cheap fun. But around 10:30 p.m., we ducked into one of the lesser-known historic houses at the edge of the square. La Casa de Ortega, I think it was called. It was open for tours, but mostly empty. No docents, no security. Just that quiet, eerie, preserved hush that old places get when they're left alone too long. We wandered upstairs, giggling like idiots, and I spotted this painting hanging crooked on the wall in a narrow hallway. It was this faded oil portrait, Jesus kneeling and praying in some kind of stone corridor. But the thing was weird. The lighting in the painting made it look like there was something hiding behind him, like a shadow that didn't make sense. I stepped closer, squinting, and I swear to God, hidden in the dark corners was a second face, like a reverse image of Jesus, same pose, same robes, but black-eyed and twisted. You could only see it if you stared too long. It didn't look painted. It looked buried under the paint, like it wasn't meant to be seen. I don't know what possessed me. I looked at Liv and said, "Should we steal it?" Half as a joke. She laughed, but I think she didn't believe I'd actually do it. I unhooked the frame and tucked it under my arm like it was nothing. No one stopped us. No one even saw us leave. We took it back to my place near Normal Heights and I shoved it in the hall closet. Didn't hang it, didn't look at it again. We were tipsy and laughing and forgot about it by morning. First night it happened, I thought it was a bad dream. I woke up choking, like the air had turned into burning trash. It wasn't like sewage or BO or anything natural. This was sharp chemical rot, like if sulfur could ferment. I sat up gasping and saw it, just for a second. A black cloud floating at the foot of my bed, slowly curling toward the ceiling. No noise, no movement. It just hovered there, like it was watching me. I blinked and it was gone. I told Liv about it the next day. She brushed it off. "Maybe it's mold," she said, "or sleep paralysis." I wanted to believe her, but it kept happening. Not every night, but enough that I started dreading sleep. Always the same. That burning, sour stench would wake me. Then I'd see the black shape, never moving, just there, lingering. I moved, twice. First to a friend's guest house in Mission Hills, then again to a sublet in North Park. The damn thing followed me. I never brought the painting with me, but it didn't matter. Every few nights, that cloud would show up. It didn't matter where I slept. It would be waiting. I never told anyone after Liv. Figured people would just chalk it up to stress or lack of sleep. Hell, maybe I started to believe that myself. Then I got a roommate. James moved into the sublet mid-December. Chill guy, worked overnight at a hospital, barely around. About 3 weeks in, he knocks on my door around 2 a.m., looking pale as hell. "Dude," he says, "you burning incense or something?" I just stared at him. Because I woke up gagging, the whole room smells like sulfur and wet ash, man. Like something died in the walls. I opened the window and it's gone now, but he paused. And I swear I saw something, like smoke, in the shape of a person. I didn't even answer him. I went to the closet, pulled out the painting. I'd wrapped it in a beach towel months ago. And I told him everything. I thought he was going to laugh or call me nuts. But he just looked at the frame, his face pale. "Dude, that ain't Jesus," he muttered. That ain't anything good. Next morning, I drove back to Old Town. No plan. Just walked straight into La Casa de Ortega, like I had every right to be there. The place was closed, roped off, but I didn't care. I walked upstairs, found the hook where the painting had been, and hung it back like it never left. The moment I let go of the frame, the air changed. No dramatic crash of thunder or ghostly whisper. Just silence. A deep, cold silence that pressed into my chest like I was underwater. Then, nothing. I left without looking back. That was 5 years ago. Haven't seen the cloud since. Haven't smelled the rot. But I still don't sleep right. I keep all the closets in my house locked. And I don't go near Old Town on Halloween anymore. Because whatever that thing was, it came with me. It left with that painting. But I don't think it ever really went away. And I still don't know who painted it, or why someone would ever hide another figure, something so wrong in a portrait of Christ. All I know is, I should have left it alone. Story 3, I used to rent this crappy apartment in a town just outside Tucson. The kind of place where the walls are thin, the plumbing groans like it's in pain, and the AC rattles like it's about to explode. I worked nights at the time, line cook at a roadside diner, so my evening wind down usually started around 3 or 4 in the morning. Not proud of it, but I'd sit out back on the little concrete pad behind the complex, crack open a few beers, and just zone out with my headphones on. Behind the building was a stretch of railroad tracks that cut through a line of trees. They weren't dense woods or anything, just enough to separate us from whatever industrial stuff was on the other side. I liked it back there. It was quiet. Lonely, yeah, but in a peaceful way. Sometimes I'd spot raccoons or stray cats crossing the tracks. One time I saw a coyote trot right past and didn't even flinch. Anyway, this was in July. Stupid hot, even at 4 a.m. But I didn't care. I was sitting on this busted lawn chair with a beer in one hand and my headphones on, half listening to some old stoner rock playlist, half staring off into nothing. Then, this is hard to explain, I felt something shift, not the air, not the sound. More like something at the edge of attention. Like my brain suddenly sat up straight before I did. It wasn't like, oh, someone's behind me. It was more like the back of my brain said, hey, look. So I looked. And I swear to you, right there on the tracks, just past the chain link fence at the end of our lot, this thing was walking. I thought at first it was a person. Same height, same gait. Just strolling down the middle of the railroad tracks, like it was taking a damn walk. But it was glowing. I don't mean like it was lit by a flashlight. I mean glowing from the inside out. Gold, not yellow, not orange, not flickering. A solid, deep gold light, like someone had filled a mannequin with molten metal and stuck it under a dimmer switch. No face, no eyes, no clothes. Just a smooth, featureless shape. Not blurry, not translucent. Solid, defined, and glowing. I pulled my headphones off without thinking. It was maybe 20, 30 feet away. And the second I did that, took the headphones off, I realized how dead quiet it was. No wind, no bugs, no distant traffic. Just silence, like the whole world had hit pause. This thing didn't look at me. It didn't react. It just kept walking along the tracks like I wasn't there. But there was something about it. Something in the way it moved, oh, that made every hair on my arm stand up. I stood up, real slow, like I thought it would bolt if I moved too fast, but it didn't. It just kept going. I took a step forward, and the beer bottle slipped out of my hand and cracked on the patio. I flinched at the sound, heart hammering, and looked back up. It was gone. No noise, no rustling of leaves, just gone. There was a group of trees a little farther down the track, and it had disappeared into those. I waited, staring, expecting it to come out the other side. It didn't. I must have stood there frozen for 5 straight minutes. Then I finally stepped down into the grass, walked up to the fence, and just stared at the tracks. There was nothing. No light, no footsteps, no burned grass, not even a sound. I thought about climbing the fence. I don't know why. Maybe part of me needed to make sure I hadn't lost my mind. But I didn't. I stood there sweating and eventually backed away and went inside. I locked the door, Didn't sleep, just sat on my couch with all the lights on, listening. Next day, I walked the tracks around noon, bright daylight, didn't see anything weird, no scorch marks, no footprints, just rusted metal and rocks and dirt like always. I haven't told a lot of people about this. The few I have told just kind of nodded like, yeah, man, wild. And I could see they thought I was either lying or drunk off my ass. And to be fair, I was buzzed, probably 4 or 5 beers in. But I've been drunk plenty of times. I've blacked out. I've hallucinated shadowy shapes in the corner of my vision. But this wasn't like that. I saw it. I saw it clearly. A glowing, gold, human-shaped thing just walking the tracks like it had somewhere to be. That was the only time it happened. I kept going out there after that, same time, same spot, hoping I'd see it again. Maybe to prove I wasn't crazy, but nothing ever showed up. I moved out about 6 months later. Not because of that, I just couldn't afford the rent anymore. But I still think about it all the time, especially when I'm walking alone at night, or when I hear that quiet, like something's just out of view, waiting for me to turn my head. People ask if I was scared. I don't even know what the word is for what I felt. It wasn't terror, not the way you feel when someone jumps out at you. It was deeper, older, like I'd seen something I wasn't supposed to see. Like whatever that thing was, it didn't belong here. Or maybe I didn't belong there at that moment, and it had noticed. Whatever it was, I never want to see it again. Story 4. I was living in Edmonton at the time, north side, just off 137 Avenue. Not exactly the middle of nowhere, but quiet enough. My brother Jeremy had flown in from Ontario to help me move across provinces. I was starting over, new job, new apartment in Regina. We borrowed this old white Ford Econoline from a friend of his, loaded it to the roof with boxes, my bed frame, a mini fridge, everything I owned. No back seats, just bungees and tarps holding it all in place. We had a plan. Leave by 11 a.m., take our time on the road since the van couldn't handle more than 80 kilometers per hour without shaking like hell. Get to Regina by early evening. We'd already done a few trips back and forth, but this was the final haul. Before we left, I remember checking the time. I glanced at my wristwatch. 10:48. I called my girlfriend Kelsey to let her know we were leaving in a few. She asked if we'd stop for lunch on the way, and I said probably not unless the van caught fire or something. I hung up, and Jeremy was double-checking that the oven was off. Later, he told me he glanced at the kitchen clock. 10:49. The reason that matters will make sense in a minute. We pulled out of the driveway at 10:55 a.m. The van felt like it was crawling, and we both knew the route by heart. Highway 16 most of the way, then down 11 into Regina. Long, straight, flat roads through nothing but wheat fields and roadside diners with names like T-Bone Tom's or Chicken Chef. I remember passing the Petro Canada station just past Lloydminster. Jeremy pointed at it and said, "That's the one with the broken air machine, remember?" That was the last thing either of us clearly remembers until we were taking the off-ramp into Regina. I mean that literally. One moment we were talking about cheap gas, the next we were pulling off Ring Road into the city. I was gripping the wheel and Jeremy was looking out the window like he just woke up from a nap. But he hadn't napped. Neither had I. He looked over at me and said, "You remember any of that?" I laughed, thinking he was joking. "Any of what?" "The drive, like, after Lloyd." I opened my mouth to answer and couldn't. It was like trying to recall a dream right as it slips away. My throat tightened a little. "What time is it?" I asked. He looked at his phone. Dobachkar Santis minute. That couldn't be right. The drive should have taken us 6.5 hours, give or take. But we'd only been on the road for just under 4. Even pushing 120 kilometers per hour, which we absolutely didn't, we still couldn't have made it in that time. Not with a loaded van and no stops. We pulled up in front of the new apartment and started unloading. Kelsey came out and helped. First thing she said was, "Did you speed or something? You're like an hour early." I froze. I said, "Wait, what time is it?" She looked at me weird. "Almost 2:40. You called me at 10:50 and said you were leaving in a few. I figured you'd get here around 5. Jeremy and I just looked at each other. I said, "We didn't stop. No traffic, no cops, but we don't remember the drive." She laughed like we were screwing with her. What do you mean you don't remember the drive? Jeremy said, we remember up to Lloydminster. After that, nothing. Like nothing. It's blank. I tried to explain how we'd both independently checked the time before leaving, how I'd called her right before pulling out, that Petro Canada was our last shared memory, and then we were just here. She stopped smiling after that. That night, after we got most of the stuff unloaded, Jeremy and I sat on the front step with a couple of beers. We both tried to retrace our steps. Like, maybe we spaced out. Maybe highway hypnosis. But we weren't that tired. We'd gotten sleep. We'd had coffee. And both of us blacking out at the same exact stretch of road and regaining awareness just in time to make a turn. That didn't add up. I said, you didn't sleep at all? He shook his head. Number, I don't even feel like I lost time. It's more like the tape skipped forward. That's the best way to describe it, like a bad edit. 1 second we were passing that gas station, and the next we were turning into the city. No in between. I checked the gas tank the next morning. It was full. We hadn't refueled, which makes no sense because the van can't make that trip on one tank, not when loaded like that. No receipts, no credit card pings, no stops. A few days later, I called the friend we borrowed the van from and asked if anything was weird about it. He said no, just old and slow. Jeremy flew back to Ontario a week later. We haven't talked about that drive since. No dreams, no marks, no sudden memories. Just a gap. Like someone lifted an hour out of my life and replaced it with nothing. I think about it more than I should. What happened on that stretch of road? Did we lose time or was it taken? I don't have a good answer. All I know is I remember checking the time. So did he, and we never got it back. Story 5. You ever see something you absolutely cannot explain, but you know it happened? I live way out in the country, in Iowa, surrounded by cornfields and dirt roads. Our family farm is isolated. Nearest neighbor is my grandma, and she's half a mile through a wooded path. Next closest is my aunt. Same deal in the other direction. No one just shows up out here. If you're on our land, you have a reason to be. This happened when I was 14, freshman year. I'd gotten into this phase where I was trying hard to impress people at school, so I'd wake up stupid early to do my makeup. My brothers, who shared the room next to mine, usually slept in until just before we had to leave. It was about 7:15 a.m. that morning. Sun was already up, dew still fresh on the grass. I was sitting cross-legged on this little wooden bench in front of my window, facing the mirror on the windowsill, doing mascara. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw something move. At first, I thought it was our cat. He'd sometimes jump up on the windowsill outside and scare the crap out of me. The blinds were mostly shut, but one of the slats near the middle had been bent upward slightly, probably from years of us messing with them as kids, so I could still see out. I leaned in to look. It was not the cat. It was a boy, just standing there right outside my window. He looked about 12, maybe 13. Blonde hair, pale skin. He was wearing this weird white shirt, long sleeves, loose like an old-fashioned undershirt from the 1800s or something. His pants were tan and baggy, like linen trousers you'd see in a museum painting. He didn't see me. He was looking off toward the east, where the sun had just cleared the horizon, then turned his head to the left, then glanced back over his shoulder like he was expecting someone behind him. At first, I just froze. I remember thinking, who the hell is this kid? Why is he standing in my yard? Why is he looking toward my window? And then it hit me. He was peeking in. I got pissed. I stood up, marched straight through the house and out the front door. I was ready to grab this little weirdo by the arm and find out where the hell he came from. I mean, you don't just go around sneaking up to people's windows out here. We have rifles on the wall, and everyone knows how to shoot. I turned the corner toward the side of the house where my window was. No one. I stopped and looked around. The grass was soaked with dew. There should have been clear footprints, but there wasn't a single one. The grass didn't even look trampled where he would have stood. No movement in the distance. No sound of footsteps running off. Just stillness. I checked around the well house. Nothing. No broken branches. No footprints on the dirt path that led out toward the fields. Just me, barefoot, standing on cold ground, feeling this rising tension crawl up my back like static. That's when it hit me. There was no way he could have reached that bent blind slat to peek in. My window's high off the ground. I'm not even tall enough to reach it from the outside. There's nothing nearby to stand on, not even a rock or a bucket. And the window screen, still intact, still dusty, untouched. I walk back into the house trying to convince myself it was just some local kid playing a prank. Maybe I missed his tracks. Maybe he ran off super fast. Maybe I imagined his clothes being weird. But I knew, I mean really knew, that nothing about this made sense. I passed my brother's room on the way back to mine. Door cracked open. Both of them were still knocked out, snoring, sprawled out like sacks of potatoes. And both of them have dark brown hair, almost black. Not blonde, not even close. When I got back to my room, I sat on the bench and stared at the window. Just stared. Something was off. Not just about the boy, but the way he moved. It was like how people move in dreams. Smooth but slightly unnatural, like he was floating in tiny increments, not quite walking. I didn't notice it while it was happening, but looking back, it didn't feel right. Like watching an old film reel that's missing frames. I didn't go to school that day. I told my mom I felt sick, which wasn't entirely a lie. I did feel sick. Not fever sick, but cold. Uneasy. Like I'd brushed up against something I wasn't supposed to see. Like something had looked back. I never saw him again. I've tried to forget about it, to write it off as stress or imagination. But I know what I saw. I know what was standing outside that window, and I still wonder, how did he get here? Who was he? And more than that, what the hell did he want? Because he wasn't just looking at the sun, he was looking in, right at me. Story 6. People think gut instincts are just anxiety, but when you've lived through something unexplainable, you learn not to ignore them. My name's Lydia, I'm 34 now, and I live in a quiet part of Derbyshire, UK. But this happened when I was 8 years old, and to this day, I can't sleep in the dark. I remember that night like it's tattooed on my brain. It was around 2 a.m. I know.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Because I used to keep a tiny pink clock next to my bed, the kind with glow-in-the-dark hands. My bedroom was small, square, and boring. Posters on the wall, a small desk, and my bed pressed against the left corner under the window. Benji, our Springer Spaniel, usually slept at the foot of the bed, curled up and silent. He was the calmest dog in the world, like stupid calm. He didn't bark at the postman, didn't chase cats, barely even reacted when strangers came over. Just a laid-back fluff ball. That night I jolted awake with a snap, not gradually, not yawning or stretching. One second I was asleep, and the next my body was bowled upright. I remember instantly feeling cold and wrong, like walking into a room where a fight just happened. The air felt tight. My skin prickled. It was dead silent. No wind, no cars, nothing. But Benji was growling. And I mean growling. I'd never heard that sound come from him before. It wasn't like a warning growl. It was low, deep, and angry. He stood at the foot of the bed, rigid, facing the corner directly across from us, bottom right of the room. His hackles were raised, his ears were up, his teeth were showing. I followed his gaze to the corner, but there was nothing there. I whispered, "Benji, what's wrong?" But he didn't look at me, just kept snarling. No barking yet, just this horrible vibrating growl, like something ancient was crawling out of his throat. My heart started pounding so loud I could hear it in my ears. I squinted at the corner, my eyes adjusting, but it was just shadow. Nothing moved, nothing should have been there. Then he barked, one loud explosive bark that made me jump so bad I nearly fell off the bed. He lunged toward the corner, still standing on the bed, and kept barking, furiously. My door slammed open. Mum rushed in, robe barely tied. "What's going on?" Before I could say anything, she looked at Benji. "Lydia, what's he barking at?" I don't know. He just started." She flicked the light switch. The room flooded with light and the corner still empty. But Benji wasn't fooled. He wasn't barking at a shadow. He saw something, or felt it. He jumped down and went straight to the corner, barking like he was trying to kill something invisible. Mum knelt beside him, trying to calm him down. "There's nothing there. What is it? Stop it." He wouldn't. He was locked in, snarling, barking, ears pinned back. Mum looked at me, her face pale. "He's never done this." "I know." She picked him up. He was squirming, still growling, and carried him out. She tried to reassure me. "Maybe a mouse or something. I'll check the loft tomorrow." She left the door slightly open. I turned on my bedside lamp and clutched my duvet up to my chin. My room was empty again, but I felt watched. I don't know how to explain it, like something was waiting. Then less than 2 minutes later, I heard scratching. Slow, long, desperate. Scratch, scratch, scratch. It was my door. I sat up. "Benji?" The scratching got faster. Then I heard this soft, miserable whimper. He was crying outside my door. I got up, heart hammering, and opened it. Benji pushed his way in, tail between his legs, panting like he'd been running. He didn't jump on the bed. He didn't curl up. He went straight back to that corner. But this time he didn't bark. He just sat, staring, not moving. His body was tense. His ears were pricked forward. He didn't look at me once. I whispered, "Benji, what is it? What are you seeing?" He didn't flinch. I climbed into bed slowly, leaving the lamp on. I couldn't sleep. Not really. I just lay there, trying not to blink too long in case something changed. Benji didn't move the entire night. He stayed locked on that one spot, like whatever he was watching was still there. And then morning came. As soon as the first light crept into the room, Benji relaxed. He exhaled, like a long-held breath, and curled up at the foot of the bed, exhausted. Nothing like that ever happened again. We never found any mice, no drafts, no explanation. But that night did something to me. You know how most people grow out of their childhood fears? I didn't, because I know something was in that room. I didn't see it, but Benji did. And whatever it wasn't human, it wasn't right. To this day, I sleep with the TV on, and I never ever let my dog sleep anywhere but next to me. Story 7. I grew up in a quiet neighborhood just outside Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Small place. Everyone knew each other and nothing ever really happened there. Until the night I nearly made a deal with something I still can't explain. I was 15. My best friend Marcus and I had this weird obsession with guitar solos, long hair, and anything that screamed rock god. We weren't good. We barely knew how to tune properly, but we thought we were legends in the making. Marcus's dad had this friend, Leon, who used to tour as a jazz guitarist. Real quiet dude, kinda intense, always smelled like motor oil and pine trees. One evening, he told us about this movie called Crossroads, said it was a must-watch if we were serious about playing. He made it sound like gospel, so we rented it that night. VHS. I remember the case, old, beat up, smelled like dust and plastic. We watched it in Marcus's basement with the lights off, and a busted fan blowing hot air in the corner. You probably know the story. Kid wants to be great, so he tracks down a guy who once made a deal with the devil at a crossroads, sells his soul in exchange for insane guitar skills. We were teenagers, dumb and full of dreams. And Marcus? He was all in. "We gotta try it," he said, pacing like a maniac. "What if it's real?" I laughed at first, but after a few minutes, I found myself getting pulled in. We didn't think it would work, not really, but we thought maybe, just maybe, something weird might happen. We looked it up online. This was back in the dial-up days, so it took like 10 minutes to load a single page, but we finally found an article that claimed the location didn't matter. It just had to be a real crossroads, and it had to be at midnight. We didn't tell anyone. We didn't want people to think we were insane. At exactly 11:50 p.m., we grabbed our guitars and snuck out through Marcus's window. The crossroads was about three blocks down, a random spot near a dried-up ditch and two cracked roads, barely lit by one flickering streetlight. Real quiet. No cars, no dogs barking, just crickets and heat. We stood right in the middle of the intersection, guitars in hand, waiting. It was hot, but my skin kept crawling like I was cold. I kept glancing around, half expecting a car to drive by or a cop to show up and ask us what the hell we were doing, but nothing. Time passed. Nothing happened. I started to feel stupid. Marcus was trying to make jokes, but even he sounded unsure now. At 12:31 a.m., just when we were about to leave, a car turned the corner slowly. I still remember the headlights, dim, yellowish, old-school halogens. It was a gray, beat-up Honda Civic, the kind everyone's uncle drove in the 90s. It didn't speed past us like a normal car would. It rolled up slowly and came to a stop right at the edge of the crossroads. We didn't move. The driver's window came down. A guy leaned across the seat, smiling. Mid to late 20s, spiked hair, big wire-rimmed glasses, pale as hell. His smile didn't match his eyes. That's what I noticed first. His eyes looked empty. No sparkle, just flat. "Hey," he said, "that's pretty cool. You guys just out here playing guitars?" We both nodded, unsure. "That's awesome. I love that. What are you playing? Blues? Rock?" "Just messing around," I said, my voice shaky. "Nice," he said, locking eyes with me. "You know, that's a beautiful guitar. Mind if I take a look at it? I could show you a few new tunings I know about. Might help you get better." I felt it right then, that gut punch of terror, the kind that makes your hands go numb. The exact phrase, "a few new tunings," it was word for word what the devil says in that movie. I couldn't speak. I couldn't breathe. Marcus said, "Nah, we're good. We gotta head back. My dad's expecting us." The guy didn't even blink. He kept smiling and nodded slowly like he understood something we didn't. "No problem," he said. "But hey, if you change your mind, I live right over there." He pointed down the road. There was a line of shadowy houses, but I swear to you, I couldn't tell which one he meant. His hand just hovered in that direction, vague and deliberate. Then he did something that still haunts me. He winked. But it wasn't a wink like someone being cheeky or playful. It felt like a seal, like the moment was now etched in something we couldn't erase. Marcus grabbed my arm. "Let's go," he whispered. We walked fast. We didn't run. We were too scared to make noise. My heart was pounding so hard I thought it would shake my teeth out. We didn't look back, not once. When we got back to his house, we sat in silence for half an hour. We didn't say a word. We didn't touch our guitars. We just stared at the wall. Eventually, Marcus broke the silence. "You think that was really..." "I don't know," I said, "but I'm not going back to find out." We never talked about it again after that night. Never tried the crossroads again. Never joked about it. Nothing. I still play guitar now and then, but every time I tune it, I think of that guy, that empty smile, that wink, and how close I came to handing him my guitar. Story 8. I'm Nate. I live in a small town outside of Charleston, West Virginia. Real quiet place. Not much ever happens here. Nothing big anyway. But there's this one night that still messes with me. I don't talk about it much, not because I don't remember, but because I remember too much. This was about 5 years ago. I was still living with my parents back then, saving up cash from my night shifts at Taco Bell. I didn't have a car, so I walked home every night. Took me around 40 minutes if I didn't stop. It was never really a big deal, even though it meant walking down long, empty streets at 1 a.m. with nothing but woods and old houses around. That night felt off before I even left work. You know that weird tension in your chest? Like something's creeping up behind you and you just know it? I'd never had it so strong. I chalked it up to being tired, maybe too much caffeine. Anyway, I walked home, hood up, music off. Every step made me feel worse, like I shouldn't be outside. I kept looking behind me, expecting someone to be there. But it was just dark and quiet. When I got home, I actually felt a little better for a second. The house was dark, everyone asleep, and the door clicked shut behind me like a seal. I locked it, twice. It was habit, but it felt necessary that night. I even checked it again before I went downstairs. Our house was a split foyer. When you walk in, you're on this landing with stairs going up and down. My room was in the basement. I flipped the basement light on real quick, just to make sure I wasn't going to trip on my little brother's crap. He left stuff everywhere. The floor looked clear, so I turned the light off and headed down. I was halfway down the stairs when I saw it. I didn't even process what I was seeing at first. My eyes caught something in the window, like movement or a shape, and I just stopped. You know when your brain doesn't catch up fast enough, so you just stare? There were two glowing red eyes looking in from the basement window. I swear to God, they weren't reflections. They weren't lights from outside. They were set deep into this black shape, too high up to be anything normal. The thing had to be at least 7 feet tall, maybe taller. The eyes didn't blink, didn't move, just stared. I didn't even breathe. I couldn't. I just stood on the stairs, hand on the railing, frozen. My legs felt like they didn't belong to me. I don't even remember deciding to move. But the next thing I knew, I was sprinting into my room, slamming the door shut behind me. I jumped into bed like I was 5 years old again, pulling the blanket over me, shaking. I laid there, eyes wide open, listening. Everything was dead silent. I didn't want to believe what I saw. I kept thinking, maybe it was a trick of the light. Maybe I imagined it, but no part of me believed that. Then I heard it. The back porch door creaked open. Not like the wind caught it or anything. It was slow, deliberate. My dog, Bear, was kenneled right next to the inside door that leads to that porch. He went ballistic. I'd never heard him bark like that. He wasn't barking like he wanted to scare something off. He was terrified, whining, growling, slamming into the crate. I sat straight up in bed. I heard the porch door close again. That slow, dragging click. It was like whatever it was didn't care that someone might hear it, like it wanted me to know it was there. I didn't move after that. I didn't sleep. I just sat there in the dark, heart punching my ribs, listening to my dog growl under his breath for the next hour. I told my parents in the morning. My mom said maybe it was a bear. My dad joked it was probably the neighbor's kid screwing around. But our neighbor's a 73-year-old widow. She doesn't have any kids. We don't have any big animals around here. And that window's a solid 4 feet off the ground. There was nothing out there the next day. No tracks, no signs, anything had even been there. But I know what I saw. I moved out a few months later. Haven't slept in that room since. And I never turn off the lights before going downstairs anymore. Story 9. I was 15 the summer it happened. My name's Cody. I live in southern Illinois, small town near Mount Vernon. Nothing but cornfields, woods, and two-lane highways. That night still messes with my head. My buddy Trevor lived on a big farm, maybe 80 acres. His folks had this old pond out back that sat right at the edge of a dense patch of woods. Looked like the kind of place where you'd bury a body and no one would ever find it. He invited five of us to sleep over that Friday. We grilled, played music in the barn, just stupid teenage stuff. Then around 10, someone suggested flashlight tag. His place was pitch dark once the sun dropped. Barely any light pollution, just stars and the occasional blink from the radio tower off in the distance. Perfect for hiding. Me, Trevor, and another guy, Jace, had walkie-talkies. Decent ones with little ear mics and everything. We figured we'd have an advantage. The others were it so we bolted first. Jason Trevor wanted to hide deep, like across the pond and into the woods. I didn't love the idea. I'd camped there once, and the forest always gave me a weird feeling. But peer pressure's a hell of a thing. So I went. We crossed the gravel road behind the pond, and the tree line swallowed us pretty quick. We split up once we got in far enough, maybe 100 yards, and checked in on the walkies every now and then. I remember whispering, "You guys good?" And Jace replied something dumb like, "Still invisible ghost mode." Trevor chuckled on the other line. Dumb teenager crap. I found a low tree with this crook about 5 feet up and climbed into it. Felt like a perfect hiding spot. Quiet, no bugs, and I could see just enough light from the moon through the canopy. It was peaceful for a while. I could hear the occasional hoot of an owl or rustle in the leaves, but otherwise nothing. Then maybe 30 minutes in, the walkie went silent. I gave it a few minutes. Then I clicked the mic. "Yo, where you guys at?" Static. Tried again. "Trev, Jace?" Just a faint beep this time, like someone keyed their mic and let go. No voice. Figured maybe they dropped it or were messing with me. I tried one last time and got something I can't explain. The walkie clicked on, but instead of voices, I heard breathing. Slow, rhythmic, like someone was standing right by the mic. I waited. "Trev?" No response, just breathing. Not crackly like bad reception, clear like someone breathing into your ear. I froze. "Cut the crap, guys." Nothing. My heart started going a little fast, but I told myself they were just screwing with me. Still, I climbed down and decided I was done. The woods felt different all of a sudden. Heavy. Then I heard it. A howl, maybe 30 yards off. Sounded like a coyote at first, but not really. It didn't rise and fall like an animal. It was flat and deliberate, like a person imitating one. Then another howl from the opposite direction. Then a third, closer. I started walking, fast. The trail was narrow and root-covered. I clicked my flashlight on, and it flickered for a second before staying on. I wanted to run, but the sounds were messing with my sense of direction. I couldn't tell if the howls were behind me or ahead. Then the walkie clicked again. No breathing this time. Just a low sound, like static but with shape. Like someone dragging something heavy over gravel. Then a voice, raspy and high-pitched, like it was trying to imitate us. "Ghost mode!" I stopped dead in my tracks. I don't know why I didn't throw the walkie and bolt. I should have. I was frozen. Then it laughed. This sharp, broken laugh, like a bad recording of a witch cackling. It blasted into my ear and I finally snapped out of it. I sprinted. I don't even remember how I made it through the woods without eating dirt. The howls turned into something else. These chattering sounds like teeth clicking together. At one point, I thought I saw someone to my left, but when I turned, there was nothing. Just branches swaying. As soon as I burst out of the woods, everything stopped. No howls, no laughter, no walkie noise, just the hum of crickets and the distant slap of water from the pond. I booked it to the barn where the others were hanging out. Trevor was already inside, along with Jace. I was out of breath, pale, shaking. I shouted, "What the hell, guys?" That wasn't funny. They just looked confused. Jace held up his walkie. "We lost this like 20 minutes ago. Slipped into the creek on the way back. I couldn't find it." I looked at Trevor. "You weren't on it." He shook his head. "We thought you went back to the house. You didn't respond when we called." I showed him mine. The little red LED was still glowing, still connected. I turned the volume up and keyed the mic again. "Hello?" Static, then nothing. I handed it to Trevor and he stared at it like it was a snake. "Dude, someone had it. Someone was breathing into it." I didn't sleep that night. None of us really did. In the morning, we went back to look for the missing walkie near the creek. We found it half buried in mud, maybe 20 feet off the path, battery dead. The weird thing was, the battery casing was open like someone had popped it deliberately. The clips were bent. I don't have any real explanation. Maybe someone was in the woods with us. But that laugh, it wasn't human. Neither was the voice. It wasn't just creepy. It was wrong. I've never gone back into those woods. Not once. I don't even like driving past them. Trevor ended up selling that walkie set a year later at a garage sale. I still wonder if the person who bought it ever heard anything. Story 10. I'm not the type to scare easy. I grew up off a dead-end gravel road outside of Ellijay, Georgia. We're backed up to about 200 acres of dense mixed forest, oak, pine, and a mess of undergrowth. I've seen just about every critter that walks, crawls, or slithers out here. Deer, bear, coyotes, even a cougar once. Nothing really surprises me anymore. Until that night. It was late March around 9:30 p.m. I just finished up the dishes and stepped into the living room with a beer when I noticed something out the front window. You know how sometimes you don't even really see something at first, but you feel it? Like your brain registers a shape before your eyes do? That's what happened. There was this black figure standing right where the edge of the field meets my yard, 20, maybe 25 feet from the front porch. At first I thought it was a person. I even squinted, trying to make out a face or some kind of detail, but the shape didn't look right. It was tall, like 6 feet maybe, but it wasn't shaped like a normal person. Shoulders too narrow, head a little too small, no arms hanging down. And the thing that really got me, it looked flat, like a cardboard cutout standing dead still. I just stood there trying to make sense of it. My porch light was on and the moon was half full, so visibility wasn't bad. I thought maybe it was a deer facing me dead on. They'll do that, freeze when they hear something. But even then, there should have been depth to it. A roundness, some curve, not this. I stepped out onto the porch real slow, not taking my eyes off it. It didn't move an inch. No shifting weight, no head turn, just still. I called out, "Hey!" Nothing. I clapped my hands, stomped on the porch boards. Still nothing. By now I was getting annoyed. I figured it had to be some weird optical illusion, a tree stump maybe, or an old feed bag stuck on a branch. I wanted it to make sense. I even set off my truck's panic alarm, thinking maybe the noise would spook it. The lights flashed, horn blaring, but that thing didn't even flinch. That's when I felt it, this pressure in my chest. Not panic exactly, but a dread that didn't belong. My brain was screaming at me to stay put, but I didn't want to be the kind of guy who couldn't walk his own damn yard. So I stepped off the porch. It was cold that night. The kind of cold that creeps into your sleeves and boots. The gravel crunched under my steps. I kept telling myself I'd walk close enough to see what it was, then laugh at how stupid I'd been. 25 feet. That's all I needed. I got about halfway there, maybe 10, 12 feet from it, close enough that I should have been able to see some detail. Fur, cloth, bark, something. But it was just black. Not like dark colored. I mean black. Like staring into a hole in the air. I stopped. I couldn't go any closer. I mean, my body just locked up. I was shaking a little, not from the cold. I tried to lift my boot for another step, and it wouldn't move. My legs weren't listening. That's when I realized something else. From every angle, my window, the porch, now the yard, it always looked the same, like I was facing it head on. But I'd moved, changed position by at least 30 feet. Still no profile, still staring directly at the front of it. That's not possible. Nothing holds a perfect facing like that without turning. I said real quiet, "What the hell are you?" It didn't answer, didn't move. I took a slow step backward, then another. The second I broke eye contact, just a blink, I turned and ran full sprint back to the porch. I got up the steps, yanked the door open, and slammed it behind me. I spun around and darted to the window. Gone, not walked away, not faded out. Gone. I was looking at an empty field. I couldn't have been away from the window more than 2 seconds. I stood there, breathing hard, waiting to see movement. A branch swaying, a shape fading into the trees. Nothing. The night was still. Too still. Not even the usual chirp of peepers or distant dog barking. Just silence. I don't know what I saw that night. I don't tell people about it unless I've had a couple beers and trust the room, and I still check that spot every time I pass the window. Part of me wants to see it again, just to prove I'm not crazy. The other part of me hopes I never do. Whatever it was, it wasn't an animal. It wasn't a person. It wasn't anything I've ever seen in the woods. And no matter how I try to explain it, bad lighting, fatigue, shadows playing tricks on me, I always come back to that one impossible detail. It was always facing me, even when it shouldn't have been. Thanks for watching. Don't leave before leaving a like to this video. Also, hit the subscribe button to support my work. And as always, have a horrific nightmare, my dear.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.